The reviews are in. Google's Pixel 6 lineup has all the key components of being a true competitor with the likes of Samsung and maybe even Apple. But is the combination of Google Tensor, long battery life, and Android 12 going to be enough? I'm Jason Cipriani with Jason Perlow, and on this episode of Jason Squared, we're going to discuss Google's latest smartphone ambitions. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Jason.
So I know you ordered a Pixel 6, not the 6 Pro, and are waiting for it to arrive. Is the anticipation killing you?
Well, you know, I almost decided not to go with a Pixel this year because I have other Android 12 phones I can play with. But it's normally, you know, when we get into the Android beta cycle that I really want a Pixel, because that's when we start, because the priority is on Pixel for that test season, so to speak. And that won't come until later of next year.
Right.
But the price was right. I thought that $600 was a good price for that phone, the regular Pixel 6 version, for my testing purposes as a main Android, you know, daily driver, in addition to my big iPhone. So I thought the price was right, and that sealed the deal. And honestly, that's what should do that for most of their customers. I think people that are now looking at Samsung phones to upgrade and other things out there, OnePlus, what have you, with the this price at this at the was it that what was it $599? I don't remember the exact. It was
$599 for the Pixel 6, $899 for the 6 Pro.
Yeah, I mean I think the $899 is not bad either. I just didn't need another megaphone. You know, the $599 I thought was fine for given the hardware and specs on that they have in that particular phone. So
absolutely. So you went through the order process on pre-order day, which was a catastrophe. So did
it was
you,
a
you
it was up, an absolute mess. Yeah.
You ended up getting your order placed though, right?
I did very late in the day. I think I tried it like 100 times before that the actual transaction could go through. Yeah.
Yeah, their store completely crashed. You know, Google, I mean, it's a search giant and is known for its web, you know, Gmail, calendar, all that stuff, right? And for their store to crash, either they just weren't prepared at all, or there were a lot of people very interested in the Pixel 6 lineup itself. So yeah, I think everybody that day had some issues ordering it. So let's kind of take a step back and talk about what exactly is included in the 6 and the 6 Pro. So this is the debut of Google's first system on a chip or processor.
Yep.
And Samsung manufactures it. But this is a Google Tensor processor system on a chip that's inside. We've done a show on this before to differentiate between the two and talk about Tensor itself. But we now know Samsung developed or manufactures it. It's developed by Google, designed by Google, and has a huge emphasis on artificial intelligence and machine learning, and also computational photography, which is a big deal for Pixel phones. They've been known for their camera quality and their picture quality from day one, more or less. I have the Pixel 6 Pro and the Pixel 6. I have both of them. I have not used the 6 very much, because I was reviewing the 6 Pro off the bat. And so some general observations I made during my time using it as far as Tensor is involved is this is a fast phone, and there are really no performance issues at all that I experienced as far as launching apps, or even like the Google Assistant voice dictation has been sped up incredibly fast now. Assistant overall is improved. It's a lot smarter. And there's some magical features, and I use the word magical loosely because it's in the name of one of the features, and it's called Magic Eraser. It's a camera feature on the 6 and 6 Pro that can do what Photoshop does, just on an easier scale, scale, I guess is the right word, for everyday users, and that is you can highlight objects and remove them from photos. And so there's a lot of, like I said, artificial intelligence and machine learning that goes into that, and that's enabled by Tensor. My experience with the eraser, Magic Eraser, is it's hit or miss. You have to take exactly the right kind of photo and have the right kind of background, and you know it has to be done just right in order for it to get it right, to make it appear like something was never there. And or otherwise you're left with blurry lines, and you can, it's obvious that the picture was manipulated in some way.
Yeah, these kind of software tricks can be kind of interesting. Like, I mean, like on the iPhone, you have that special studio lighting effect that's done, you know, when you take portrait photos and stuff, where you can completely erase the backgrounds for stuff. That doesn't work all the time. You know, again, as these algorithms get better, you know, and they have more of a sample of things that they can look at, you know, I mean, then they can do more intelligent decisions on the fly, localized on the chip. So, I mean, a lot of this machine learning stuff is going to be dependent on sample, right, that exists in the cloud, its ability to interact with the cloud using, you know, these specific machine learning APIs that the Tensor has access to that other phones don't. You know, it's a hybrid, you know, kind of a split brain approach. You know, you have what the processor and the phone can do, its ability to analyze data on the phone, and then being able to communicate with Google's cloud and to do offloaded processing. So that's something that Google can uniquely do with its own hardware that other manufacturers cannot when running Android.
Yeah, so Google announced Magic Eraser, I think it was 2 years ago at Google I.O., yeah. Maybe 2019. Might have been even longer than that, but I think 2019 is the right year. And then it kind of disappeared. And their demo when they first announced it was, taking a picture of a kid playing baseball through a chain link fence, and using the feature, you could erase the chain link fence and have just a photo of the child playing baseball out on the field. I think he was pitching or maybe batting. I don't remember exactly. And then it looked fantastic. It looked amazing. And just like, oh my God, we're actually going to be able to do this on our phones. And then we never heard about it until Tensor and the Pixel 6. So it's very good for a first generation product, but it's not what they promised. If you go back to that original demo, I could not imagine taking a picture through a chain link fence, how that would end up looking. It would be a mess. I guarantee it. So one thing I noticed when testing the Pixel 6 Pro is I actually ran some benchmarks and compared it to the Microsoft Surface Duo 2, which has a Snapdragon 888 processor, and I compared it also to the iPhone 13 Pro Max, which has Apple's A15 Bionic processor, or A15 processor. The Tensor processor scored the lowest out of all three of them, and it wasn't even close. Like, it was really low, which would make you think that it was actually very slow. So Pixel 6 Pro single core score was 963, multi-core was 2607. 13 Pro Max was 1732 for single core and 4673 for multi, which is practically double the speed of the Pixel 6 Pro. Yep. Whereas the Duo 2 didn't fare as well, which is expected for Snapdragon 888 at 1106 and 3520. So roughly, I don't know, that's a lot of math. I would say 50% boost in performance over Tensor. But again, using the device, you would never know that the benchmark scores were that low. And you certainly cannot tell. There's no sluggishness. There's no hiccuping. Anything you do is processed right away. And so, look, the focus wasn't on performance. Google has said this up front. Focus isn't on performance. We don't want to open apps faster than anyone else or whatever. Right. It's machine learning and AI and in the computational photography that we're focused on. And it, even if the performance wasn't a focus, it still comes through when using the device. So if you look at, and I'm talking to the listeners, if you're looking at benchmarks online and you're getting discouraged by what you see, and you have one on order and you're waiting for it to arrive, don't get discouraged. From firsthand experience, this phone is incredibly fast and smooth. And I was really impressed, and the score surprised me because I didn't run them until I was writing the review. So this was after a week of using the phone, and I expected iPhone 13 Pro Max-like scores when I ran them. So it was a little surprising to me that they were so low. So you'll be surprised. One other area I think we should talk about before we dive into like the camera and stuff, Perlo, is the 5G confusion that Google created.
Yeah, I'm still confused.
I think a lot of people are, and this is Google's own doing. They came out, you know, we had the announcement, and they talked about 5G support for 6 and 6 Pro. Millimeter wave support is there, but it's not all phones are created equal as far as the Pixel 6 goes. 6 Pro buy the phone from wherever you want. You're going to get millimeter wave and sub six support out of the box. You don't have to worry about it. You're paying the extra money. They're giving you both. You're good to go. The Pixel 6, though, is a little different. And I know this was a bit of a surprise to you just a few minutes ago. So here's how it breaks down after Google published a support document explaining everything. So if you buy the Pixel 6 from Google Fi, unlocked, which is directly from Google, or T-Mobile, you'll have only sub-6 5G. So that's the 5G network that is maybe a little bit faster than 4G LTE at times, sometimes a lot faster, but you're going to have less network congestion and it's just going to be a better overall experience. So it's a good thing, but it's not the super fast 2 gigs per second that, you know, carriers like to show off. However, if you buy the Pixel 6 directly from AT&T or Verizon, you'll get both millimeter wave and sub-6. Those two devices are also more expensive. I believe Verizon is charging around $50 to $100 more for their Pixel 6, and AT&T is charging $40 more for their Pixel 6, and they're justifying it by the millimeter wave edition, which is even adds more to the confusion. So here's my best advice. If you're going to buy the standard Pixel 6, buy it directly from your carrier. That way you're getting the proper support for whatever 5G network and connectivity that they're going to offer. Yep. Unlocked is always the way I recommend to go, but in this case, it's a little different. So what happened to you, Perlo?
Well, I bought the unlocked version because I always buy the unlocked version. I always buy it directly from, you know, Google's Pixel store. I didn't realize that there's more than one flavor of the Pixel. You know, when I buy an iPhone, I buy from Apple. You expect it to work on every single carrier exactly the same way because there is no difference between the iPhone unlocked as it lives on any other carrier versus what carrier is selling it directly. It's the same phone, identical phone. So having a phone that is a different flavor on different carriers is weird. It also introduces some strange problems with resell because, like, for example, I could get that AT&T version of that phone, but then when I try to resell it on Swappa a year from now, when I'm going to want to do that, it may not be as desirable a phone to sell as the unlocked. So I mean, I'm going with a phone that's theoretically less capable because it doesn't have the that millimeter wave capability, which frankly, where I live, I'll never see it. There's no plans to roll that out anywhere near where I live. But it's still something that annoys me that they're doing something like this, that they're not all exactly the same phone, no matter what, you know.
I mean, you're paying for that service regardless, right? You're still paying for 5G. You should be able to take advantage of whatever 5G network and connectivity. Say you go to a sporting event and they have millimeter wave there. You should be able to take advantage of it. You're paying for it. Might as well use it. But if you don't buy from your carrier, in AT&T and Verizon's case, you're not going to be able to take advantage of it. Where I live, we still don't even have 5G on AT&T. So I get this and I get the frustration, but it doesn't make any difference to me because millimeter wave is so far off in my area and because we don't even have standard sub-6 5G yet. But, you know, it is what it is. And that's been the 5G rollout from the last 4 or 5 years. All right, so let's dive into the camera because I think with Pixel phones, this is a huge deal for Pixel users in general. Yep. Is like I said earlier, Pixel has always been known to be one of the best smartphone cameras on the market, except for the last couple of years. It's really felt like Google has just kind of phoned in, and that's no pun intended there. The camera, as well as the design and devices themselves. But this year, that's all changed, and Google did quite a bit because of Tensor, is what they're saying. With the camera. So on the 6 Pro, they have a 50 megapixel main camera, and that has quad bare binding that goes along with it. So it's 150% more light that it is able to receive when you press that shutter button. So your photos are going to look a lot better. The 12 megapixel, 114 degree ultra wide camera, and a 48 megapixel telephoto lens with up to 4x optical zoom. So that's on the 6 Pro, which is, I mean, look, that's a massive camera, and that's what I'm going to speak about here because that's the one I've used. But Pixel's back. The Pixel camera is back. This camera took some pretty amazing photos. I don't include all of them in the review because they are family members. I went to a birthday party, a family member's birthday party while testing this phone, and I took a lot of portrait mode photos during that time of, you know, candid shots and whatnot. And I captured this photo of my niece eating ice cream and cake, and it is the most adorable photo, and it is something that I didn't even have to think about capturing, and it's something that I think the iPhone probably would have done a good job as well. The iPhone 13 Pro would have done a good job with as well. But where I saw the biggest improvement here from Google with its algorithms, especially in portrait mode, was in defining and differentiating between foreground and background. And more specifically with like photos of people with crazy hair, you know, the iPhone still struggles with this a bit. And that is, the hair is either blurred out because it thinks it's in the background, or the area around the hair isn't blurred out when in a portrait mode photo because it thinks it's the foreground. And so there's a, it looks, you can tell it's 100% artificial and it's very easy to spot. But the photos I took with the 6 Pro while testing it came out really well. If anything, they're maybe a little too saturated at times, and that's only looking at them on the Pixel 6's screen though, which is weird because you know, I had it at natural setting for the vibrancy, and yeah, it, like the red hue and the pink tint to the photos came out a little stronger on the Pixel 6 display, but when I load them on my Mac or even look at them on my iPhone, they look a little bit more realistic and natural to life. It's like the Pixel 6 camera is, or the 6 Pro's camera is great. I don't have any issues with it, unlike last year's Pixel 5 was just kind of, it's the same thing they've done all along. What are you looking forward to using the most?
So, you know, most of my photography, I do a lot of food photography. And with food, you have to use natural light. You don't ever want to use a flash when you're doing food because of the moisture content in food. You get that reflection that bounces off and it looks plasticky and nasty. I also tend to do it in when I'm using natural light in not in like full lit settings. I like to use like, you know, light coming out of the windows, you know, so like, you know, in lower light situations as well. In a restaurant, you know, typically in a nicer restaurant, you know, they have muted light settings and you're not going to use a flash inside a restaurant when other people are eating in a lower light setting. So I want to see lower light performance on this camera. And I expect that, you know, with their night mode capabilities, they probably enhanced and some other things they're doing, plus the larger sensor, the larger 50 megapixel sensor, which I believe is already is still on the lower end model. They just don't have that telephoto version, I believe. The larger sensor is going to make a huge difference in its ability to capture light. You know, not so much the number of pixels, but you know, the larger sensor is right, going to make a big difference. So that I'm really looking forward to quite a bit.
Yeah, the Pixel 6, just so listeners know, has two cameras instead of three. Like you said, you're correct. 50 megapixel main camera and the 12 megapixel ultra wide. So what it loses is that 4x telephoto, which, by the way, I didn't even mention there's a 20x super res zoom feature, kind of like the Galaxy S20 and S21's, what did they call it, space zoom or whatever it was. Yeah. Also on the Pixel 6 Pro, I messed with it a little bit. I wasn't too impressed with the 20x portion of it. The 4x telephoto is key. Like that's, it's clutch.
Zoom is always going to be inferior to physical, the actual optics. I mean, that's just
absolutely, absolutely. But Google likes to say that their machine learning is really good, and while in some scenarios I'm sure it does a great job, you're not going to want to use digital zoom. You're going to want to rely on that 4x optical, which is, you know, standard. No machine learning applied there. No digital correction or anything like that. So it works really good. Let's see, what else do we need to talk about? We need to talk about Android 12, which I think is a huge highlight of what the Pixel 6 is. And granted, other Pixel devices are getting Android 12, but I think the combination of Tensor and Android 12 kind of complete the package, and the promotional value, or the value of the 6 and 6 Pro, and solidify it as a true iPhone contender, and at least laying the groundwork for it in a lot of ways. And, you know, so Android 12 has a lot of design changes, probably the biggest design change we've seen to Android ever. It's going to look a lot different when it reaches your phone, depending on your phone manufacturer. Of course, Samsung is taking this sort of middle of the road approach with its design, but the new Material U design is, to me, it's fascinating because it's almost fun to use and see. There's little animations throughout it. Like, for example, when you tap the sleep or wake button, the display itself almost minimizes into the button. So it either light starts to light up and come out of the button when you wake your device, or it starts to go black and shrink into the button itself. And the apps have the same sort of animation as well. All of them, again, are fluid. Performance is strong. But then you get into the Material U stuff that changes colors based on your wallpaper or your background, your home screen background. And your app icons change colors, the app drawer, the quick settings panel. There's little areas of thought and influence that normally would go unnoticed that Google is starting to pay attention to here. And it makes, and this is going to sound weird, but it almost makes Android fun to use again. Back like when it first launched and it was really like blocky, it was fun then because it was different. And now it's fun because it's more animated and it's more interactive. If you move, for example, the weather widget around, Google's new weather widget around on your home screen, the color of the widget is based on the color of that particular section of your wallpaper. Yeah. So if it's on an ocean, it's going to have like a light blue tint to it. Or if you move it to the beach, it's going to have a tan look to it. And it's a lot of fun to use. And I know I keep saying that, but it truly is. And the interactive level of it. And I know you've used Android 12, but not on a Pixel yet, right?
Not on a Pixel yet. On two other manufacturers from China, but not on a Pixel itself. But I will say that it does seem to be a big improvement in a lot of areas. Now, where I'm really interested in with specifically with the Pixel is where in Google's actual apps does Tensor come into play? You know, where are their hooks into the machine learning capabilities of that chip from things like, you know, Google Photos? Obviously, the camera app itself, right, is specific to the Pixel implementation, I believe, for Android. And, you know, where else is that chip's machine learning going to be accessed, you know, from Google's line of applications? Do we see it in the weather app? Do we see it in other widgets? Will Gmail take advantage of it for any way? You know, some of these other things. You know, I'm curious where those hooks exist that are going to allow the Pixel to continue to differentiate, as opposed to these other phones, which may have to do certain things in pure software. You know, right. You know. So that's where I want to know. You know, where those hooks are. I think Google needs to publish those APIs and say this is where these things. You know, require a machine learning processor to hook in, you know. I mean, because it is supposed to be an open cloud ecosystem for all their cloud apps that use Android. So the question is, are these APIs generic APIs that any machine learning processor can use, or is it something that only the Tensor can use, right? So that's something I think needs to be established going forward.
Yeah, some of the areas that I noticed it outside of the camera and photos app is in the phone app itself. And now Google's had call screening for a while now, and which means that if you get a phone call, you can let Google Assistant answer it for you, and it'll actually screen the call. You could tap buttons on the display to interact with the caller. And, you know, you have a personal assistant answer the phone for you to get rid of, you know, the spam calls that we all deal with on a daily basis, or at least nearly daily basis. But they've expanded that now, and they have the wait for me or hold for me, whatever feature it's, I forget the name. But if you call a business's 1-800 number, you can now have Google Assistant wait on hold for you. And when someone actually picks up the phone, it'll ring on your end. And so you can then talk to someone. So you're not sitting there listening to hold music for 30 minutes. So that's been out for a year, year and a half now. They've taken it one step further now. And instead of you having to sit there and press, listen to the phone tree menu, you know, where it says press 1 for this, press 2 for that. you can actually view the options on your phone screen. And you could say, I need help with billing, or I have to activate a line, or I have an outage. And you tap on the buttons there for that. So that's one new feature. You don't have to actually hold the phone up to your ear, take it down, and use the number pad. You're actually in live, you know, real time, it's able to figure out what the phone tree menu is and display it on your display. So you can just tap the screen. But the other one I thought was really interesting is they are now integrating when you call a business's 1-800 number. So and they included a few examples, which one of them was the IRS phone number, or no, the passport office phone number. So if you need to get a new passport, renew your passport, you start to dial that number. Eventually it recognizes what you're calling, and on the display in your phone, in the phone app, it shows you the estimated wait time based on the time of day and the day of week when you're calling. So if you're calling at, you know, 8 a.m. on a Monday, wait time is crazy because everyone's gone the weekend and they realize they need a passport or they have an issue, and so wait times are long. But it's just like when you go look up a business on Google Maps and you can see how busy the business is, and you see that bar graph that shows you when you should go or shouldn't go, and what the estimated wait time is. It's the exact same approach, but they're doing it in real time on your phone just from you dialing the phone number. So there are a lot of other areas outside of the obvious examples of the camera and photos app where this tensor and machine learning are coming into play. And phone app is the last place I expected to see it. But I mean, I dialed a Comcast phone number. I dialed a lot of random phone numbers or started to dial them just to see what would happen. And that it was lightning fast how quick that information came up and was displayed. And again, voice dictation through the Google keyboard was also sped up incredibly fast, and it's very accurate now, and it does punctuation for you, little things like that.
So, Jason, let me bring up the black mirror aspect of this. We now have a machine learning processor that's extremely powerful on this phone, and you can see that there's certain type of voice analysis capabilities that are built into this that Google has access to. Now, if we can do that in the phone app, why can't we do voice stress analysis in the app on the fly? For example, why can't the phone tell you this person is lying? This person sounds angry. This person sounds upset. While you're one, either listening to a voicemail, or two, on the fly, having that conversation with somebody. Yeah. That seems to be something that is quite possible.
Oh, I mean, Amazon already does it on your wrist.
With the right type of teaching occurring to the app, you'd have to build up that expert systems profile for that. But it sounds like it's very possible to do that.
Well, yeah, Amazon does it with their Halo band. They've done it for the last couple of years with far less powerful and probably far less smarter technology. And so there's nothing stopping Google from doing that. And I don't know I don't talk on the phone that often, but would that information be helpful for a business who's dealing with customer complaints or customer issues? Absolutely. Maybe it would be a good thing. It's a slippery slope, right? It's a slippery slope argument. How far is too far with what machine learning and AI can do and tell us about our interactions with other people, and where's that line that's gone? You know, once you cross it, you've gone too far. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. So let's talk about the elephant in the room. And that is, does the Pixel matter now? Like, and I know you don't have one yet, so your opinion probably can't be fully formed quite yet. But like, Google has made a big deal about its Pixel line over the years. And for the last few years, like I said earlier, it felt like they were kind of mailing it in, phoning it in. And now they have the groundwork for a true iPhone competitor. And I truly, after using the 6 Pro for the last 10 days, feel that the Pixel 6 Pro is the iPhone of the Android world right now. At least the groundwork is there for it. But there are a lot of missteps. For example, the 5G rollout on the Pixel 6 and the 5G explanation on the Pixel 6. Can Google finally start putting pressure, let's just stay within Android for now, on Samsung and be a true competitor in the smartphone industry? Or is this still a niche product for people who happen to see a commercial or a billboard and actually think, I wonder what that is? Or are they just going to keep buying the next Galaxy S, whatever is released?
So, you know, this is sort of a balancing act that Google now has to play that Apple has never, ever had to play. Apple has always been proprietary in their software, proprietary in their hardware, fully control their ecosystem. They tell the carriers what to do. You cannot carry this phone unless you meet these specific requirements of us when you're selling it and all these other things. Google, you know, is an open source company in terms of, you know, the Android operating system that's being developed in the wild that requires community participation. They allow anyone to use it, right? And with the exception of what has to be licensed if you're going to produce a Google authorized, you know, Android device with the Play Store and all that stuff, there are certain rules that, right. You know, not just carriers have to follow, but the manufacturers have to follow. Now, these are things that, you know, the antitrust organizations, you know, in various world governments are looking at. The EU is looking at it. The United States government is looking at it from a potential antitrust perspective. Antitrust, you know, they're also looking at Apple for very similar, you know, controlling type reasons. So can you be an open source company and say, hey, everyone can use it and you add your value add to it, while at the same time withholding functionality and things like that, specifically to Tensor's chip and other things that exists specifically on Pixel at the same time, right? Microsoft kind of sort of does this with Surface by having their own hardware, but it is the same Windows 10 more or less that everybody else uses, right? So it's a tough call, right? I mean to fully exploit the Pixel, you have to have these reserved features to make it a special phone. Is that something that they can do, you know, while not upsetting their partners like Samsung and others? I don't know. It's going to be a tough thing to do. I think at the price point that it's at, it's an attractive phone, a very attractive phone when you compare it to the Samsung and some of the other, and quite a few of the other things that, you know, have been in that price point for the last 5 or 6 years, you know,
right.
I don't know if I would even consider a OnePlus at this point with the Pixel 6 being at $599. I don't know if I would consider most of the S21s at $599.
$899 for the Pro. That's better than most. The S21 Ultra is what, $1,000, not on sale. So or
yeah,
1100.
I mean you might look at certain things like memory and some of the other stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, this is a phone that's going to be updated for 3 years, right? On Google's program, and you will get that update on time every year. You will get the bug fixes on time every year. And any other, you know, app improvements are going to be prioritized incrementally on that phone all the time. You're going to see the latest version of Gmail. You're going to see the latest version of Photos. You're going to see all that stuff updated first on the Pixel, because that is what they are developing with internally. That is their benchmark, their, developer device. So
right.
From a consumer perspective, I want to see all those things first as somebody who is someone who likes to play with new technology. So have they had a lot of missteps up to this point? Yes. Do I believe it can be a product that is successful and there will be industry uptake? Also, yes, but they need to be able to manufacture enough of them. They need to be able to get their, their carrier distribution deals correctly. If they screw up on the carrier reseller side, that's going to hurt the experience for everybody. If the direct sales thing with the 5G and all that kind of stuff isn't resolved, that's also going to upset people if they don't have access to some of the newer network technology that's available. So there's still stuff they need to fix. But does it have potential? Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I agree. So like I said, the groundwork's here. The Pixel 6 Pro and Pixel 6 are two of the best Android phones I've ever used. And that includes, you know, older Pixels, which I've always enjoyed using up until the last couple of years, and Samsung's phones. I'm excited. I'm excited that it finally feels like Google is truly taking the Pixel line and its hardware ambitions seriously. And I'm basing that off of Tensor. and the new design and the improved cameras, and actually, you know, putting some effort into all of this and not just relying on software tricks to make up for shortcomings. Although there still are several software tricks involved here. But I think it's a better overall experience than what Samsung offers right now. And at the prices, which are their launch prices, not their sale prices, and Google does quite a bit of its own promotions and own sales after a device fully launches. Remember, these devices are still up for pre-order. You know, they're supposed to be shipping, I think, starting tomorrow or sometime this week. And so we haven't even got to the point where Google starts discounting these or carrier starts discounting these. There's a lot of work to be done here, though, for them to compete. They need to secure prime real estate inside carrier stores. And, you know, where Samsung used to be, that needs to be where the Pixel is. And
honestly, this is just the phone ecosystem we're talking about here, right? The other 800-pound gorilla room is iPad. And, you know, and also watch, right? So, you know, the integrations between all that stuff, look, we haven't seen a Pixel tablet in years. This Pixel Slate was the last thing they launched and they killed it, and they haven't launched another Pixel tablet since. You know, and what's going on with their Chromebook ecosystem, you know, they need to kind of rationalize where all this stuff fits in that ecosystem. Yeah. I think now with the Tensor chip, there is potential for a new Pixel tablet. And quite frankly, I have not been impressed with Android tablets, even Samsung's, in the last several years. So there is still work, you know, in this area for other form factors to be, you know, for you know, Google's version of Android for their products to be used. There's other areas where they can touch on this. Certainly, I think that, you know, their streaming product is fantastic for the price point. I think that the Google TV is a great product. There could hopefully they continue to enhance it, and that the integrations with Pixel, you know, become more. Frankly, I haven't looked at it heavily in, you know, a couple of months, you know, because I've been playing with Android TV. I'm playing with Apple TV in my living room. You know, yeah. I have my Google my Android TV hooked up to my bedroom television, which I haven't been watching as much. But you know, now that with the Pixel coming out, I want to see what those integrations look like with Android 12.
Yeah, there's a new remote app in Android 12 to work with Google TV. I think that is on par with the Apple TV integration into iOS 15 that we have now. So if you're listening and you're going to end up with the Pixel device, we'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on what you think of your Pixel 6 or 6 Pro after using it for a little bit. You can figure out how to, or you could find how to reach us on ZDNet.com. Just look up our author profiles. We're on, you know, direct access to email or Twitter there. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Perlo, any last final thoughts on the 6 Pro? Or 6?
No, my man hopefully should get here in a few days, and I can't wait to switch my sim over to it and all my apps and stuff and start really playing with it. I mean, I really want to play with that camera and start taking some cool, you know, food shots. You know, I got some pizzas I need to bake in the next couple of weeks, lots of pizzas, because I'm working on a pizza article. So there will be lots of close-up pizza shots, Jason, I'll be sending your way, that you can tell me what mistakes I'm making in my baking, because I know you do quite a lot of that.
I look forward to it. Yeah, I plan on using the 6 Pro quite a bit over the next few months. So I'm Jason Cipriani.
And I'm Jason Perler.
And this is Jason Squared. Thanks for listening. We truly appreciate it. Hope you have a great day. Make sure to check out more of our work at ZDNet.com.